You are listening to RudolfSteinerAudio.com. If you are listening to the podcast of this, it is located at RudolfSteiner.podbean.com. Please consider becoming a patron. As well, there are two publishing houses, SteinerBooks.org in America and RudolfSteinerPress.com in England, who are the sole publishers of Steiner into English and have given me permission to do these recordings. Please consider patronizing them as well. This is a reading of Collected Works, Volume 282 by Rudolf Steiner, a cycle of lectures entitled Speech and Drama, translated by Mary Adams. This is Lecture 7, entitled Some Practical Illustrations of the Forming of Speech, given on the 11th of September, 1924. Readers aside, this is a very problematic lecture for those of you listening. There are huge sections of this that are quotations from other works, literary works, and then Steiner tries to show, as he discussed in the previous lecture, how these are in the mood of E or ah, etc. And I'm not reading those long sections. First of all, they're in German. I just can't do that justice. And the English, I'm not sure, would work either. So you'll be hearing just little snippets of his illustrating of what that was. And so I leave it to you to decide whether to listen to the whole thing. That's why I'm forewarning you. All right, end of readers aside. My dear friends, I would like today to center our study around a scene from a play of Hammerling's that can serve to illustrate many things that I have been explaining. A course of lectures on a subject of this kind is necessarily all too short, and I can, in any case, do no more than make a few suggestions in the hope that these may stimulate you in your work. Nonetheless, although our time is short, I propose to use the present hour to throw light by practical example upon the importance of what I have said about developing, in preparation for speaking on the stage, a feeling for word and a feeling for sound, in contradistinction to the feeling for sense and idea. Today, therefore, we will take this practical demonstration as a basis for our study, and it is my intention to speak the parts in such a way as will enable you to glean at least an elementary understanding of how a reading rehearsal should go, if it is to prepare the ground for the actual performance of the play on the stage. Thus, having in the first part of our course given our attention to the forming of the speech, we shall now be considering all that has to do with production as such, with the right forming of the stage picture. It goes without saying that before any such rehearsal, the explanations I have been giving of what is required for an artistic way of speaking must have already taken root in the unconscious and be present there as artistic instinct. Where mention is made of these matters at all in rehearsal, it will be presumed that in those who are to take part, the feeling for sound and the feeling for word have, by long practice, become a complete matter of habit. It will, in fact, be of quite other matters that one will have to speak there, alluding only as need arises to the fundamental principles of speech formation. For of these, the actor should bring with him an intimate knowledge, no less surely than a pianist who is preparing himself, or maybe a pupil, for a concert brings with him the faculty he has acquired for piano playing. The scene I propose to take is the opening scene of a drama of Robert Hemmerling, entitled Danton und Robespierre, a play that is concerned, as the title tells us, with the French Revolution. I have chosen it because I think the moods that come into consideration for this scene, and I need not remind you how important it is for the moods to find clear expression in the performance, are such as can easily be conveyed to the minds and hearts of people in general. For they are unmistakable and sharply distinguishable in their coloring. The scene is, moreover, also valuable for us, in that the moods give opportunity for transforming by stage technique even the most prosaic content into an artistic formation of sound and word. We are here transported into an important moment in the history of the French Revolution, when the mood of the public was undergoing a change. That stage in the revolution is just being reached when the popularity of Danton is beginning, gradually, to give way before the popularity of Robespierre. A great number of people are on the point of transferring their loyalty and devotion from the one to the other. Let us first of all see that we understand the true nature of the people's loyalty to Danton. Some are loyal to him out of a sincere and faithful devotion. In others, their loyalty was prompted rather by their own political aspirations. But all might be said to regard him with what I may almost call a savage admiration. Consequently, we find permeating the scene something of the sound and word feeling. I am speaking here from the point of view of a stage technique that results from the working together of awe, wonder and admiration for Danton, and oh, a certain rude affection for the man. The scene is pervaded by an mood, in the sense in which I have explained this to you in the earlier lectures. Tune your feeling to the sounds and you will have the mood that prevails at the beginning of the scene. Loyalty to Robespierre was of quite another kind. At first it only reached men's hearts in a fitful, spasmodic way. The lean and lanky man, looking so like a schoolmaster, whose words cut like knives, did not easily inspire admiration in his fellow men. He had to seize on every opportunity to win it. In fact, the first stage of Robespierre's popularity was marked by a kind of wariness and caution. In the case of individuals as well as of the masses, it was out of a certain defensive attitude that admiration for Robespierre was born. Translated into feeling for sound, it is a sounding together of a and ah, so that in the people's feeling for Robespierre, we have the mood that you can hear in a ah. In this scene, therefore, which evinces throughout a delicate instinctive feeling on Hamerling's part for sound and word, we have to find the transition in the whole speaking of the parts from ah, o, to a, ah. And we shall be able to do so if we look into the scene carefully. That is indeed the reason I have chosen it, because of all we can learn from it. Hamerling built up the scene with an instinctive discernment for what is required in dramatic art. I shall draw attention as we go along to features that would require to be noted in the reading rehearsals. My remarks will naturally be rather sketchy. In actual rehearsals, the various points would need to be further elucidated. For we have here a scene that can provide us with an excellent lesson in the very things we are concerned with in these lectures. Note how we are introduced, first of all, to a countryman who had been in Paris 15 years before, and never once since. The man has been deaf during the last 6 years, and on this account it has easily come about that he has as good as slept through whatever echoes of the big events penetrated into the provinces. He has heard nothing of all that went on. He was treated for his deafness by the village barber, who was also something of a surgeon, as was still usual in those days, but with no particular success, and he was advised to go to Paris. One can certainly have one's doubts as to whether even in Paris the cure would be such an easy matter. However, here he is again in Paris, cured of his deafness and bearing his part in the changeover of moods that I have described. But all the time, as one who has only just become able, after 6 years, to hear what is being said around him. You will find at once the basic tone for this man speaking, if you give yourself up to an ah feeling that is tinged with Let us see what this will mean. For throughout the first part of the scene, the countryman will be the chief figure. The whole attention of the audience will be centered upon him. It might even be said that the other characters are present only in order to give color and variation to the main interest that attaches throughout to this man. Actually, the success of the play as a whole will depend to a great extent upon how the part of the countryman is played in this first scene. We know, of course, that awe signifies wonder and admiration. The mood is a little modified in this character of the countryman, but the actor will do the part well if he takes pains to speak as much as he can with his mouth open. I shall be dealing with gesture and mime in the later lectures. Today I will confine my remarks to the speaking. This will allow the ah mood, which is the prevailing mood of the scene, to pass almost imperceptibly into oh, which is what the part requires. From the very outset, we sense also that a change of mood is imminent. We are moving toward the transition from the ah, oh, to the a, ah mood. This is portrayed for us with wonderful artistic skill. You can feel here with what a delicate touch Hammerling works. And that is what I want you to notice before all else, the artistic achievement, quite apart from the prose content of the scene. The countryman is put there on purpose that we may be still hearing the echo of the mood connected with Danton, while at the same time having our expectation aroused for the gradual transition to the mood that is connected with Robespierre, the mood that we can clearly detect in the second part of the scene, where the conversation of the various characters goes clanging back and forth like sounding brass. So much for a rough sketch of the mood in which you will have to experience this scene if you want to take part in it and form your speaking in the right way. The scene is laid in an open space in front of Notre Dame. Readers aside, and now we have his quote, end of quote, Steiner then again. These citizens are fellows of quite another stamp than our countrymen. They are Parisians who exhibit to the full mood that was then uppermost in Paris, and they give a new coloring to the countrymen's words that have set the motif at the beginning of the scene. We are to think of the first citizen as having a kind of E mood, and the second a rather quieter and more serious U mood. You will remember how I explained these in the earlier lectures. Readers aside, there is again a quote in German, end of quote, Steiner again. Yes, you are right. The audience will laugh at these words, but they must be spoken with all the seriousness of one who is taking a responsible part in a revolution. And that is a seriousness of an altogether different stamp from the seriousness with which we are accustomed to approach everyday affairs. We have to picture the countryman saying those first words of his alone to himself. Then the citizens come on the scene. They stand at a little distance from him, and now he goes up to them. Readers aside, there's a quote. Close quote, Steiner again. The name of the month is not, after all, a matter that touches him very nearly, that he can accept. That he can accept. Now he is called upon to grasp the further fact that there are no longer any Sundays. Readers aside, beginning of a quote, end of quote, and Steiner again. And now a sansculotte makes his appearance. When you come to look carefully at this sansculotte, you will find you can best enter into his part by combining the ah mood with the e mood. For he has undoubtedly wonder and astonishment, and these have fired him with enthusiasm. But he has at the same time, as it were, in the background, the pleasure and enjoyment that his own self-consciousness affords him. Quote, close quote, Steiner again, the sansculotte has noticed that the countryman does not hear very well. quote, close quote, Steiner again. In those days, anyone who dared in Paris address a man as gentleman was hung up on the nearest lamppost. Quote, close quote again. The day of the Girondists is past and over. The Sansculotte imagines that the countryman is thinking of the autonomy that was enjoyed by the provinces when they were in power. Quote, close quote, Steiner again. Mamoro is a citizen too, and moreover, as we shall see, a man of some importance who stands with the whole force of his personality right in the immediate moment of the revolution. He is, however, at the same time, beginning to feel that the ground under his feet is getting a bit shaky. Fresh people now come forward and prepare the way for a new mood, the mood that I characterized as reminiscent of sounding brass. We are, in fact, at the moment when the loyalty to Danton is passing away, in favor of loyalty to Robespierre. We must accordingly watch for the transition from the ah-o mood to the a-ah mood. Loyalty to Robespierre is quietly stealing in, and that fact must find expression in the whole mood of the scene from now on. Quote, close quote, Steiner again. Mamoro talks the most naturally of them all, and helps to lead over to the new phase in the revolution. He is at the moment in high esteem, and this must be apparent to the audience. Quote, close quote, Steiner again. For at this point, in order to show how the mood is changing, moving all the time in the direction of the note that has been sounded by Robespierre, a new speaker steps forward from among the crowd, who is under a certain disability, a man with a wooden leg. The crowd, we shall find, is gradually working its way free of the completely different mood that has hitherto prevailed, and beginning to enter into the mood that is connected with Robespierre. The E mood that belongs to him begins to be heard. Quote, close quote, Steiner again. Note the skillful way in which the personality of Robespierre is introduced. The Sansculotte abandons his role as Sansculotte and suddenly shows himself as a marvelous portrayer of character. If this moment in the scene is rendered with the coloring that it has been my intention to give to it in my reading, then in this speech that the Sansculotte addresses to the people around him, the audience will feel the swing over of loyalty of which we have spoken. The critical moment of transition has come, and as we go on, I shall indicate here and there some of the points that it would be important for a producer to have in mind. The second mood is now upon us. It overwhelms the scene as though with a confused and deafening noise. I compared it, you will remember, to the clash of sounding brass. Quote, close quote again, Steiner again. Here we have the ö mood, o umlaut. It has to be spoken forward. It must let the speaking strike onto the front part of the palate. Quote, close quote, Steiner again. From now on, the women speak more in the I sound. With the entry of Robespierre into the conversation, the revolutionary impulses begin to be imbued with a sort of coy and affectionate enthusiasm. A. Ah. Quote, close quote, and again the last chapter in, last paragraph in this lecture. Steiner again. I wanted to show you, by practical example, how a scene like this should be treated. I have laid on the coloring a little more strongly than would be necessary in a performance, because I wanted you to have a particularly clear picture of how the different moods come severally to expression in the treatment of sound. We saw, for example, that the countryman has to be spoken throughout with the mouth open, for he is to reveal the ah mood. A slight intoning of ah should even be audible in every sound he utters. Similarly, you will find the clerk has to speak so that something of an E enters into each one of his sounds. His voice is always in front of that E boundary in the mouth, of which I was speaking the other day. It is continually striking the front part of the palate. It is by paying careful attention to details like this that we can gradually learn to give form and style to our speaking on the stage. As the end of Lecture 7 and the end of Part 1 of the book, Speech and Drama, Part 2 is entitled The Art of Production and the Art of Acting. That's Lectures 8 through 14. End of Lecture 7.